So to go ahead and get started here, I just want to first say that we are recording this call for the presentation of information, and then also so we can distribute that later. We're excited by all of you that are able to join us, and so let me start by first welcoming you all to this call, talking about the Tech Expansion Program and the National Science Foundation-funded EAGER grant. We're excited to kind of talk through the details of what this is and what it isn't. But first, to introduce myself, my name is Andrew Coy, and for those who don't know me, I've been both in and out of the organization Digital Hardware Foundation over the past 5-6 years. I took a brief break and served down in the Obama administration, but I'm excited to be back now in the role as executive director, working alongside with the same folks that have done such a fantastic job making everything happen. And on the call from Digital Hardware, we have Sean Grimes, Seth Grimes, and Jonathan Prosy, who will be talking about the specifics of the grant. But let me first give a little bit of context for the National Science Foundation EAGER program and what it is focused on. So a number of years ago, back in, I think, 2015, the National Science Foundation said we're interested in Maker and this technology-related innovation that comes from that. We want to support that, and we have a program called EAGER, which are relatively small grants by the measure of National Science Foundation grants, but they're meant to test out ideas that set a potential but are still being figured out. So the specific EAGER grant that Digital Hardware Foundation applied for back in December of 2016 was a research-focused question about how programs at Digital Hardware Foundation can scale and extend the impact. So I'll let Sean jump in and talk more about that, and then the rest of the team as well. But I just want to give you context that the National Science Foundation is specifically interested in research. And so a lot of their work is driven by this research question and what the learnings for the entire community will be, how those learnings are going to be shared and distributed, in addition to then, sort of implementing some sort of a scenario in which you can look at those research findings. So it does have some limiting factors in terms of what we can and can't do with this, but we're really excited about the potential because the point of an EAGER is also to build up an understanding such that you could apply for a larger grant in the future. And so with that sort of context about the National Science Foundation and this specific type of grant that we've received, I'll turn it over to Sean and the team to talk through the details of what it is and what it isn't, and then we'll open it up at the end to answer some questions. So with that, Steph, if you want to take it away.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. So the research question that we are focusing our efforts on is pretty specific. And so its exact phrasing is, what are efficient, effective methods of scaling maker-based technology education programs for middle and high school youth? That is the question we are out to seek answers to, and this whole project will be working towards that goal. And Sean will talk a little bit more about the methods of how we're going to go about doing that.
Yep. So as Andrew mentioned, the research component of this is sort of directed by NSF, and there's not a whole lot of wiggle room in what was approved and sort of what we can do. There are requirements for the research project, such as data collection and adherence to the research protocol. And partner sites will need to be able to commit to participating in the research, the results of which can be anonymized, but you'll have to be willing to work with us to collect the data, and we can do the sanitizing of it together. The research project is going to explore three different professional development models to study the potential for each engagement method as a potential solution for scalable yet effective maker and technology training. The three engagement models that we'll be testing are home site, where the partner site staff comes to DHF and is trained on the topics in the curriculum, satellite site, where DHF staff go to the partner site and train the staff at their location, and then remote engagement, where all of the collaboration with the partner site is done online and through remote learning methods. There'll be three phases of deployment. So the first phase will be site assessment and setting up the space. This is where we'll work with the partners and take a look at what existing infrastructure and capital that they have in place and where the gaps are to implement a maker and technology program. And then we'll also work with them to procure the resources to bridge that gap and talk to them and train them on what they'll need to be considering when setting up their makerspace. The second phase is actually the training on the curriculum and then the implementation by the partner site with their youth base. So in this phase, staff from each site will be trained using one of those methods, home, remote, or satellite, in the curriculum, and then they will go off and implement the content area in their existing programs or in a program of their choosing. The last phase, one of the things that NSF and DHF are really interested in is the ongoing sustainability of maker and technology programs in these programs. And so in phase three, what we're really going to be providing is support and guidance on the partner sites implementing their own next phase of maker and technology curriculum, helping them to develop what makes sense for them for what's the next step beyond just this program. With that, I'm going to hand over the timeline to Jonathan.
Hello, everyone. Jonathan. So we've laid out the timeline, which we're going to share now. The February 8th is when the application opens up, and then March 31st is the deadline for the application. And then in April, the sites will be selected and announced, and we'll have more about that process in the call later in the call. And then on May, we'll be conducting site assessments to go over the selected sites. And then starting in June is when the Making for Educators training begins for the sites using the three methods. And then in July this summer, we'll be doing the site transition. So that's when the sites will transition after the training. And then in August, the Maker Foundations training will be complete. So then from September 2018 through January 2019, all sites will have started the Maker Foundations program. And then February to May 2019, sites will be developing their own curriculum for ongoing projects. And also site staff and youth interviews will be conducted during that time, as well as an increase in the collection of data just as we move towards the next phases. And then in June to August 2019, we'll be analyzing the results, writing research papers, and then August 2019, the research findings will be presented to NSF and submitted for publication and presented at professional conferences. So that's the methodology and timeline of this process. And on this call, we wanted to talk about four main things that you'll need to know to participate. The first is the site requirements, and then also the selection process, what partners will be getting and what they won't be getting, and then the last is answering any additional questions that you may have. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steph for the site requirements.
All right. So one thing that we are, we have some specific things that we're looking for in sites who will be partner sites for this research project. We're looking for an existing program that operates in the state of Maryland that serves middle and high school age students in an informal or out of school time setting, must have internet connectivity and control over the filter settings. This is to ensure that youth can access the open source learning sites that we've got built in as part of the Maker Foundations course and resources to accompany that. Also must have sufficient teaching staff to maintain a 12-to-1 or better youth to instructor ratio for the program. You must have demonstrated interest in implementing your own Maker activities or programs beyond the Maker Foundations course. You must have demonstrated interest in curriculum building and other long-term engagements through informal learning models. You will clearly articulate alignment between the skills and equipment introduced in Maker Foundations and your program goals. You must have a strong youth-focused program. This program doesn't have to strictly be limited to STEM-oriented spaces. You could be a space that does more rec after school or more sort of general after school care that's interested in getting more into STEM and making and technology. You have a historical success of recruiting interested and committed youth participants in grades 6 through 12. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to serve all of those grades, but that is the window that we're looking within is between those grades. And this will be indicated in things that we'll be asking for as evidence of this are average daily attendance and the average age of youth in your programs. You'll have demonstrated financial sustainability of your programs and will be comfortable being part of a research project and the responsibilities of such an engagement. Jonathan's going to talk a little bit about the selection process.
Okay, so the sites that we're looking for will represent a diverse cross-section of socioeconomic and geographical areas within Maryland. And then also there will be a formalized application, and in that application, that's where some of those points that Steph had mentioned, the average daily attendance, things like that, that will be part of that application. And then the next part is a community review panel, which is going to be similar to the NSF review process. For example, applicants will be divided up amongst the panel, and then the panel members read ahead about their assigned applicants. Then the panel meets and discusses each applicant and rates them. And during this process, anyone with conflicts of interest refrain from rating an applicant. And then Digital Harbor will conduct the due diligence, which may include the preliminary site visit and or any additional follow-up questions for the applicant. And then after that, the announcement of selected sites for this pilot research phase will happen in April of this year. And Sean's going to talk about the what is and what is not included for the selected site.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening in this project, and we're really excited to work with partner sites. But I think it's important that we clarify what is included and what's not included. I'll start with the positive first. So each site is going to receive up to $4,000 in consumables for implementing the program or the curriculum. As well, each site will receive up to $21,000 in equipment. And this equipment will be selected based on each partner site's needs following a site assessment. So it won't be the same equipment to all the sites. It will be very specific to what gaps each partner has. Each site will receive 80 hours of ongoing training from Digital Harbor Foundation, as well as some consulting. And each site will receive 100 licenses for Digital Harbor Foundation's Maker Foundations curriculum. Going on to what is not included, this does not include any program operational costs, such as staff, space, utilities, or marketing costs for youth recruitment for the program. This is why we're looking for an existing program that's interested in expanding into technology education. The reason goes back to the original research question, which is focused on understanding how to train sites to be able to deliver technology education, as opposed to what it would take for a new program to start from scratch. Johnson.
All right, so we're opening up at the end here to answer any additional questions that you may have. So we know we've talked about a lot of information here. We will be creating an info sheet document that shares all of this information, as well as a recording of this call. But at this time, we'd like to open it up for any questions that you may have at this time. So to ask a question, you can dial *6 to unmute yourself and ask a question. And please announce yourself and your organization when asking the question. And then also, if you have additional questions that are not addressed on the call and would like to follow up, you can always email sean@digitalharbor.org. But we'll go ahead and take our first question now.
Ramel Hathaway, when does the actual gun go off and the submittals begin?
February 8th, the application will be opened, and it'll be open until March 31st.
Hi, this is Kim Truhart at Liberty Rec Center, and I'm wondering, does the site have to be dedicated to this research?
Can you clarify?
We have a computer technology room with computers that I cannot dedicate to any one purpose. Does this require us to dedicate the facility for this one purpose?
Great question. It does not require a dedication of space or any sort of requirement around that. It just requires a dedication to run the program. And however that fits into each partner's schedule is up to them.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Chris Rock from Southeast CDC.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't. Go ahead.
I just had a question along those lines. Is there an estimated amount of time that the curriculum takes per day, following up on the last question?
So in our space, it's run as a 14-week program that runs 2 hours a day, 2 days a week. That can be restructured and sort of there is some flexibility in restructuring that.
But it's a 56-hour course.
Yeah.
So there's flexibility in in how you would structure that, in the length of time it might take, and the number of hours your program runs versus how our program functions here in our space. But you will have to deliver the full 56-hour course.
Hello, this is Chris Ram with the Southeast Community Development Corporation. My question, so I think I'm understanding that the purpose of this grant is to train a new organization how to start a maker model. But my experience with Digital Harbor is that your model is much more significant cost-wise than what this grant is. So what is the time period for raising money to launch this at any kind of scale similar to yours?
That's a little beyond the research question here. We have the money and resources that are being provided are meant to supplement an existing staff that's already trained in youth development that has space and footprint.
Yeah.
What we're doing is sort of bridging the gap between they already have a great 4-H program, not to call out a specific name, but they already have a great art program, and they want to add a little technology and maker to it. And this would be a great way to sort of infuse that, inject that.
Go ahead.
Let's go for it. Do you want me to say a little bit more? Or was that question answered fully? This is Andrew jumping back in, because I'm happy to add a little bit more clarity if you have an additional follow-up question to this one.
I guess my question is, so we have a partner that does arts programming now. The purpose of this would be to train them in how to create or add the makerspace to their existing program, and then after that, we're working on bringing it up to scale.
Yeah, so and specifically with this grant, the funds that are there are sufficient to get all of the equipment needed and the consumables for the program. So you won't have additional capital expenses that are expected. For running the entire program, that's what that $21,000 plus $4,000 in consumables is designed for. What is not covered, though, is the cost of the staff for running the program. So if you, as an organization, are not in a position to have staff deliver the 56 hours, then there will be a requirement on your side to raise those funds. And given that the program starts in the fall, there is a window of time here between now and the fall that you could be working towards that. And we do have a commitment on our side that we are looking for a geographically and socioeconomic diversity in this process. So we're not it's not a pre-concluded sort of condition that you have all of those things in place all up front, but the application process and the evaluation process should just be very transparent about where you all stand, and we're happy to work with organizations across the spectrum of that. But there are requirements that the organization has the capacity to deliver the program, and that is not included in this specific research grant.
Got it.
This is Kim Truhart again. So we need technically capable staff for the 56-hour course. Is that what you're saying? And some additional hours.
Well, the staff will all be trained in how to deliver the content, so they don't have to have existing technical skills up front. They have to be comfortable with learning new topics. But many of the staff that we work with in our program have no previous experience with the content.
Hi, this is Jen Bishop with the Carroll County Public Library, and I have a question. So for the 56-hour course, is that a 56-hour course then that we would need to deliver to like a cohort of youth, or in the public library's case, is that something that could be broken up and it doesn't necessarily have to be the same attendees each time?
That's a great question, Jen.
Sorry.
It's a great question, and I know it'll be really applicable to a lot of the library models. I think the ideal is that it would be a cohort of youth, and that can be small, but I think the idea would be the ideal situation is that it is a continuous group of youth that are going through each of the courses.
And we can talk with our research partner, I think it's about controlling the variables. That's sort of my initial reaction.
Okay, so maybe partnering with a after-school program at a school, maybe a yes. partnership yep. of sorts. Yep. And that way yeah. we could have the same cohort going through.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think the size could vary mm-hmm. of that cohort, right? We fund them everywhere from, you know, a small handful of youth up to 25 with success. So so there's some variation there or some flexibility there.
Hi, this is Marielle Dano with Creative Alliance. We currently run an after-school program, and we have a partnership with a nonprofit called Tech Canal where we use their equipment twice a week. And I guess I'm wondering how much consultation is provided in terms of looking deeper into STEM and I guess I'm just curious in general, how much consultation is provided for curriculum?
For existing curriculum or new curriculum that you might want to create?
New curriculum.
So if as part of our timeline, sorry, I'm scrolling to see my notes. the sort of February to May of 2019 is what we have blocked off as helping our partners kind of develop the next version of this. We've also gotten some funding already to start working on kind of the next phase of this research project or what the next training would be. And in addition, let's see, the consulting, it's not set to a specific amount of time. But it's about, it was 80 hours of training and consulting combined. So
that's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's only between February and May of this year.
No, the training will occur throughout. So like the first training is in June, I believe, and that's like a workshop training. And then the consultation will happen. Sort of, it'll happen throughout, but that will be a. The February to May timeline is focusing on, okay, what happens after your foundation, right, after you run this one particular course.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Hi, this is Stacey Davis from Baltimore City Schools. I actually have two questions, if that's okay. The first is, you mentioned that the sites need to be in control of their own content filter. Does that include a school that can work with a district's IT department to get sites unblocked, or are you saying basically that schools that aren't in control of their own content filter can't participate?
As long as they have reasonable policies for getting it unfiltered or unblocked, we have no problem with that. But if it's sort of, it takes 30 days or 60 days, we've seen some pretty unreasonable guidelines for that type of stuff. A lot of it we can provide ahead of time so that it can be front-loaded. So I would see no problem as long as, you know, the unblocking is done in a reasonable amount of time, let's call it, you know, 48 hours or so.
Well, and as long as it doesn't impact the progress.
Okay, so that would work out then in terms of being able to front-load those sites and get them whitelisted. And then my second question is, how exactly are you measuring success? What is the criteria for success for this program?
Yeah, so we have a baseline of our youth programs here, and then we'll be taking those same baseline measurements and applying them to each of the three partner sites at the end of their cohort or their 56 hours and comparing the results. And some of the measurements that we're looking at are I'm going to just force mute everyone again real quick. Okay. And Stacey, if I don't fully answer your question, just unmute yourself with star six and I'll continue. But so what we look at in terms of our impact is tech career awareness, new technology skills, new technology exposure, measurement of creativity and divergent thinking and stuff.
Increase in tech confidence.
Increase in tech confidence. So those are the areas that we're measuring specifically that in our existing programs. We're working with researchers at UMBC, and we've developed some of these measurements. We've developed all of these measurements now. There may be some additional measurements, and it's not necessarily comparing the success of the program as much as it is comparing the success of us training the sites for the program. Oh, yeah. So we have researchers at UMBC who have been doing our evaluation for our programs, and they're our partner on this research grant. They will be doing the actual academic research analysis. We sanitize the assessment records and then send them just the results and an ID, and then they perform their data analysis on it.
This is Mary Stapleton from Towson University. I wondered, we're sort of a field trip destination in the Inner Harbor of Baltimore, and one of our limiting factors is transportation money for particularly Baltimore City Schools to come to us. If they're going to bring a group of kids, they usually take a bus. Is there any money for transportation in this first grant?
There's not. Okay. I'm sorry. It's purely consumable materials for the actual curriculum and then capital spending on equipment.
Okay, so in our plan, we have to have a way to get kids to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, this is Trish Cassatt with Girl Scouts. I have a question about your target number of youth in a group. If your ratio is 12 to 1 and your investment is $25,000, do you 12 would not be sufficient for that investment, or do you have any metrics that you're using to look at how many you think is the right number of youth?
So that 25,000 is, we realize that there might be some sites that might not have any computers at all, and so we may need to provide computers for their site. We also realize there might be some sites that have computers already but don't have 3D printers. And so the ratio is really going to depend on what the needs of the site are. I would say our target ratio is going to be between 10 and 20. And then, we'll work with the partner sites to see, what gaps they have in their equipment to fill.
So 10 to 20 youth per site?
Yep.
Yes, this is Debbie from Let's Go Boys and Girls in the Lakeland Theme Center. Just wanting some clarification on the 56 hours. And I think I want to just make sure I heard the single cohort correct. So are you looking that the cohort of students would take 56 hours of content in that kind of fall semester?
Yes. Yeah. So we, again, we run that as a two-day-a-week program for roughly 14 weeks. It depends on holiday schedules and things like that. So that we usually start our program, just as an example, we start our program at the end of September, and it runs through about mid-January. Again, that's 2 days a week, like a Monday, Wednesday, or a Tuesday, Thursday. But, it could be shortened and be done 4 days a week or 5 days a week for a few hours a day and shorten the week-long timeline.
Right. I gotcha. So just to make sure I'm hearing this correctly. So the goal would be that a site would be able to have a committed one cohort of, I think I heard, a number of somewhere 12 to 20-something classes.
Yep.
So you're really just looking for a single cohort of students who can complete that course.
Yes.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Leisha from the Village Learning Place.
Hi, Leisha.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, I wasn't sure I unmuted correctly. Can you talk a little bit about the training specifically, I guess, so you said 80 hours of training/consulting, but is it, you are training one staff, you're training a cohort of program staff from each site. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I guess I'm very interested, but worried about a June training session because we run summer programming.
Yeah, so we do too, Leisha, as you know. And so our goal is to sort of I don't know when your summer program starts, but we usually take like a week between the last day of school and the start of program. So that's sort of our goal for when that training would happen. But it's also, there's a little bit of flexibility in there because not all three partner sites are going to be trained on the exact same day.
Right.
Because there's three different methods.
Okay. And when you say training, that initial training, do you think it's a 1 or 2 day or is it like a week?
So the initial training will just be a 1 or 2 day. It's like a 1.5 day. And then in August, it may be another 1 or 2 day, maybe 3 day on the actual curriculum. As far as how many staff you can send, that's been a discussion that we've been talking about. I think we're all in agreement that it's at least more than one because we like the idea of sustainability. And so if you have two people there, if one leaves, you still have another person, plus they can work off of each other. How high up that can go, that's a little bit of a question that we're still discussing amongst ourselves.
And then just the training, is this duplicative or is it, so I am actively pursuing funding to send my staff to your Makers for Educators and as well as the, I think it's Intro to 3D Printing. Is that this training that the teachers will get, or would this be specific to the project or different, or how would they kind of overlap or work together?
Yep. Great question.
Great question.
So the first training is the Making for Educators training, and that's the one in June. The one in August is a training that we've not offered to anyone else in the public, and so it's something completely different that no one else has even seen yet.
And specific to the curriculum and program, and to the Maker Foundations course.
I submit my summer collaborative grant tomorrow, I should put in for the Intro to 3D Printing.
Yes. Yep. And the other thing is,
that's the safe bet.
It's also one of those things of, we're going to be looking at where places are starting. So if you've already have a 3D printer from the 3D printer training, well, that means you have additional money to spend on other things that you might not have. Or sites are going to need more than one 3D printer. And so maybe we're providing three for each site. Well, if you already have one, you can either choose to get three or you can get two and get something else to replace that. We're looking at individual needs of sites.
And this is Andrew chiming in on this one. I'll also just say that I wouldn't change any of your plans for what you're putting in. So whatever you were going to put in before, I'd put in again, because as you can tell, there are a lot of different organizations interested in this specific research. And we can only pick three given the funds that are available. So, do whatever you were going to do independently. And then if you were to get both, we can work with you to get additional training for your staff and other things that we do as well. So it's not we will make sure to maximize the benefit to you as an organization, whether you're in this specific research or out. That's something that we're committed to, and we don't see this as the end of these types of programs, but it is a starting place, because once we understand which method of training works best, we're going to be going and asking for a broad implementation grant, which is one of the larger NSF programs, right, that run anywhere from $1 million to $3 million in funding for much broader implementation. But first, we wanted to understand which approach would be best so that we didn't ask for that with an approach on our side that didn't sort of have the optimal likelihood of success, right? So that's really what we're looking for here. And we're selecting sites not based on what they bring to the table in terms of like how much they've already done this and how advanced they are, but in what they can help us learn about how to do this in a broad range of different environments, right? So that's another thing. Just want everyone on the call to know that the being selected for this research is not somehow an evaluation of your program strengths or weaknesses, or it's our reflection on that. It's much more trying to help answer the question, what's the best method for doing this, so that when we go back and ask for increased funds, we are spending those in the best possible way to benefit the most number of people. So hopefully that answers your questions, but I would say don't change your plans based on the potential for this. Proceed as you deem best.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
This is Christian from Fort Discovery Children's Museum. I wanted to ask some questions about the curriculum itself. Does it specifically revolve around 3D printing, or are there other aspects of technology that are taught in this course, like Arduinos or Raspberry Pis or anything?
Yeah, that's a great question, Christian. So the curriculum is made up, the Maker Foundations course, and sorry, Sean was doing some muting that was talking to us. It is six different modules. The first module is like a what we call orientation, and so that is things like setting up email address, how to use digital communication tools, how to do Google searches that will enhance the experience and help them become better self-learners. And then we go into graphic design, 2D graphic design, where they're learning to make art, and the output of that is making game artwork for the next module, which is a game development module. And so they're using game development tools to create a mini game, at least one. And then they go into 3D printing, 3D design and 3D printing, and then electronics. So during that, it's not so much Arduino and Raspberry Pi as that's some of our more advanced courses. But in here, we're focused on simple circuitry and using the Makey Makey as a tool for demonstrating that. And then the final module is a web development module where they're learning HTML and CSS and building functional web pages using those skills. And then at the end is a capstone project where we ask them to put together two skills from two or more of those modules to create sort of a mashup project of something that they are interested in.
Wanted to point out, I'm not muting everyone to silence the questions. It's just a chance that to kind of cut down on the background noise that lingers after people ask their questions. You can also self-mute yourself again after you've answered your question with star six. And one thing I want to touch on about the curriculum is, yes, there is technology, and we use that as sort of the hook, but one of the main components is teaching the youth how to learn on themselves and learn on their own, and then to combine creativity and productivity into an output. And so the tech is more of the hook than it is the...
The tech is the vehicle for some softer skill development.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, are there any other questions? And just a reminder, to unmute yourself, it is star six. We'll give people just one more minute here to ask a last question or two. These have been some fantastic questions, though. We appreciate everybody really thinking through how this may be of benefit to you and your organization.
This is Carlo Duran. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. How are you? I got to the conference call late. I have a question for you. Can faith-based organizations such as churches, can they apply for the grant? And some of them run the programs with volunteers, most of them, and over the weekends or afternoons, a couple times a week. Can they apply for it?
I can double check, but I'm not aware of any limitations other than it has to be outside of school time.
Okay.
So, yeah, we would love to see organizations that run the gamut, including churches and other types of groups applying.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
I know there's enough on this call, so.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Christy from Girl Scout.
Hi, Christy.
When the program is completed, will you be sharing the data and the results with the participating organizations?
It will be public. Yeah, it is public information because it's a government-funded research project, and it will be published in research journals, but... Of course, we'll be sharing it with our partner sites as well.
Yep.
Great, thanks.
Hi, this is Shannon from Catherine's Family and Youth Services. I understand that the application will become available February the 8th. Is that something that will go out in the email, or we need to check a website, or how will we know that it's out and ready for us to apply?
Yeah, as long as you're RSVP'd for this call, you will get an email notifying you that it's up. We'll also be sharing the document that's the info sheet for this call to the RSVP list, as well as the recording of this call for the RSVP list.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ellis Marcellus. I was working with the Boys and Girls Club in West Baltimore, and we developed a two-semester curriculum on building networks. And the program, for a lot of reasons, was closed as we had, you know, was beginning to start the curriculum. And my question was that, is it possible to partner with anyone who doesn't have a pre-existing curriculum, or is that the curriculum that you already have is the curriculum that needs to be used for what you're doing?
So the curriculum we have is the curriculum that needs to be used. It's one of the controls in the experiment or in the research. The sites, we're asking for existing programs because That's the only way we can validate that you have a sustainable program, that you can recruit youth on the regular in the sort of age range that we're looking at. You know, as Andrew pointed out earlier, this is really just the tip of the iceberg for where this is going. And so, you know, in the beginning, we're really, one of the things that our researchers are pushing us for is finding three organizations that are in a similar level of maturity so that the amount of variables that we're testing against are relatively controlled.
Hi, this is Vernon Myers with Kish. Just wanted to make sure I got Hi. I just wanted to make sure to get some clarification, make sure I understand correctly that this opportunity is open to anybody with an existing organization within the state of Maryland, correct?
That is correct.
As long as they're serving middle and high school.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Noreen from William Pender Hughes Elementary Middle School. And you said, hi, and you said as long as you're serving elementary, I'm sorry, middle and high school students, can I'm in an elementary middle school, but there's a portion of the after school program specifically for our middle school students. So is that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, middle or high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It could be either or both. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Come on, keep them coming.
Yeah, well, and just one note here as we're getting to the end of the time that we've allotted, you know, if there are additional questions or if you feel like there's something unclear and wanting to get feedback on how your organization may fit into this or if there's some piece, we are more than happy to have conversations with you as a follow-up, you know, and dive into some of your specific details, you know, with you and think through how you could present yourself in the strongest possible light. You know, and again, we are utilizing a community sort of panel to evaluate these. So, you know, so we're happy. We want that panel to have the strongest applications in front of them. We don't envy them for having to go through and sort of evaluate these because that, you know, there are so many reasons why any one of your programs would be an ideal fit for the types of things that we're looking for. But we're wanting to make sure that everybody puts forward their strongest foot, and we're not trying to obscure sort of what the criteria are or how we're evaluating, because we want you to know, you know, what questions we're asking and you know, in terms of the research and what have you, and then put your foot forward for that. And again, you know, any selection is not a reflection on sort of the program itself. It's much more of the fit for the research question. And you know, we're happy to also talk with you if you're saying we really want to do this type of program. Where can we get funds? You know, as well. Like we've talked to a lot of different funders, and we're happy to sort of you know, encourage you in your application process for different grants that we know of that are out there as well. You know, so we're more than willing to sort of be a sounding board as you're going through this application process.
The other resource I just want to point out real quick is we added a banner to Digital Harbor's website today so that it goes right to the info page for this call. So if you didn't RSVP, you can go there. If you have someone else who you think would be worthwhile to hear this information, you can send them to digitalharbor.org. The banner's right at the top of the page. They go to that page, and if they RSVP, it'll put them on the list so that when we mail out the recording, they will get it.
And the application.
If you have any questions.
Sorry, just said we're going to be updating that page as we mail that stuff out. So it will live there publicly for people to be able to access as well.
Yep. And if you have any questions after the call as well, feel free to email me. And it's sean@digitalharbor.org. And that's just S-H-A-W-N.
Okay. Then,
hi, I had one other question concerning the budget. This is Maria from Creative Alliance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How should we be budgeting for equipment per student, such as computers?
Go for it, Sean.
I was just going to say, as part of the selection process, we will help you figure that stuff out. And some of that money that we have can actually be used to purchase computers if you don't have them already as part of your program. It's not a prerequisite to have any technology to be accepted. And so we'll be working with you as a selected site to go through that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then unless there's any last question, I'll give you all one last chance here to ask a question. Okay, hearing none, then I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, thank you everyone for taking the time to join the call and for your excitement for this research project that's funded by the National Science Foundation. We're exceptionally excited to just hear the sort of varied types of groups and sort of what it means for the interest across the state. And we're excited to help build the capacity of others to do programming similar to what we have done. And so any questions or help that we can be in this application process, please don't hesitate to reach out and share the word if you think there's somebody that would be very interested in this as well. We appreciate your time today, and we will be in touch soon.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.